What have we got left?
Who knows?
I show 67 and 87.
All right.
All right.
Read that first one, please.
Okay, 67. Accept briefing on the CE John and NWDA Clean Diesel and Conduct of Construction Good Neighbor Agreement Conway Master Plan.
Okay, here comes our Conway team. Thanks for your patience this morning. Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor Harrells and Commissioners. My name is Phil Sellinger, Board President of the Northwest District Association, one of the city's oldest neighborhood associations serving Northwest Portland. Over the next few minutes, you will hear about the C.E. John and NWDA Clean Diesel and Conduct of Construction Good Neighbor Agreement pertaining to the Conway Master Plan properties, an agreement receiving unanimous NWDA board support. This innovative agreement, innovative at least to the City of Portland, was born out of the neighborhood's collaboration with Conway Incorporated in preparing the master plan for their 20 acres of property in the northeast corner of our neighborhood. We are excited over the planned transformation of these underutilized blocks while recognizing the challenges and impacts their development brings. The redevelopment of these properties is already reshaping and enhancing the community. The agreement addresses a commitment to use clean diesel-related rated construction equipment, as well as best practices for access management, traffic management, safety and security, and neighborhood communications as these properties are developed over the next 10 years. The process was led for the NWDA by Board Member Kathy Sharp, next to me, teamed with Air Quality Chairperson Sharon Genasi. We were fortunate to have the pro bono support of environmental attorney David Paul. Board members Karen Carlson and Wendy Chung provided behind-the-scenes assistance. Oregon DEQ's Kevin Downing, who you will hear from, was a critical resource to this process and the shepherd for pending clean diesel retrofit grant funds. Partners in putting this agreement together were Craig Boretz, Vice President of Development for Conway, who is represented by attorney Jill Long of Lane Powell. While a master developer for these properties had not been selected, we were fortunate to have Tom DiChiara of C.E. John Residential Construction Group at the table from the outset. Indeed, while the intent was for this agreement to be crafted between the NWDA and Conway, it became more practical in the end for Conway to turn the agreement over to C.E. John, as C.E. John was indeed designated as the master developer for the majority of the Conway properties. Our presentation this morning will include Kathy's summary of the agreement and its impetus, followed by Tom DiChiara of C.E. John providing the developer's perspective. Kevin Downing will conclude with a broader view of the agreement and its implications. We'll hopefully leave time for some questions. The NWDA is appreciative of the partnership and the unwavering commitment of C.E. John in putting together this good neighbor agreement, and we are nonetheless mindful of the hard work before us in its implementation. We are hopeful that this agreement might serve as a template for a more far-reaching city or statewide framework, construction management framework, that mitigates the impact of construction activities such as toxic diesel emissions on the surrounding community. Kathy?
Kathy Sharp, good morning. The Northwest neighborhood is wrapped by freeways with air quality impacts to the south and to the east. Our north neighbors are more traffic ways and the industrial neighborhood, and to the west, the hills of the Tualatin Mountains provide our homes with an eddy of poor air quality. No one has ever moved into Northwest Portland for its fresh air, and in fact, many have moved out because of air quality. There are many articles describing the negative health impacts of our air. The Oregonian had an article on autism. The City Club had a report on diesel. USA Today listed Chapman, our neighborhood school, as having the second worst air quality in the nation. I'm not going to talk about the cancer risk or the chemical soup of Northwest Portland's air. I'm going to talk about this clean diesel conduct of construction good neighbor agreement. Our good neighbor agreement was recommended by city staff the NWDA had requested clean diesel equipment as a requirement of the Conway Master Plan. Portland staff from the Bureau of Development Services and Portland Bureau of Transportation felt that air quality, specifically the requirement to use clean diesel equipment, was beyond the scope of the master plan approval criteria. So city staff encouraged Conway, at that time it was Conway, to work on a good neighbor agreement with NWDA concerning clean diesel. That was August of 2012. The team began meeting in October of 2012. Much of our time was spent on clean diesel, given the technical nature of that topic. We all learned a lot about diesel, filters, health impacts, availability, and as a group, we listened to the experts from around the country, reviewing the work from New York City's Twin Towers project, Boston's Big Dig, Pittsburgh, and Chicago. We became more familiar with the diesel rules in California and Washington. The agreement, we came to agree on the following key components. These are big. We'll be utilizing contractors and subcontractors with Tier 4 certification or willingness to pursue Tier 4 certification with 95% compliance to the agreed-upon goal. We're going to be maintaining access to local businesses during the construction period, including bike and pedestrian access. We'll be protecting community assets, including trees. We'll be managing the impact of traffic, especially construction truck traffic, by planning safe routes around the neighborhood. And we have a goal to keep the public well informed of all construction activity. This good neighbor agreement covers approximately 10 years and 20 acres and many individual projects. Because each project is unique, specific information is not available. The good neighbor agreement requires that C.E. John would provide a site logistics plan for each project that provides information for achieving the standards and exceptions to this agreement on a case-by-case basis, including all the key components of the agreement, because we all know there'll be exceptions, and then we'll work with those exceptions. The agreement provides for scoring the inventory of on-site construction equipment relative to their conformance to the agreement's EPA Tier 4 clean diesel target, with that score being weighed for the horsepower and hours of use for each item. The initial weighted scores will be presented in the pre-construction site logistics plan. A neighborhood group comprised of representatives from the Planning Committee, the Transportation Committee, and the Air Quality Committees will meet regularly with representatives from C. John to review how we're doing. And if there is a dispute, we all agreed to a 30-day dispute resolution period, which would proceed to seeking informal, non-binding, non-judicial mediation if we can't work it out among ourselves. This has been a successful experience, but there is much work to do. The Conway site is only one construction site in a neighborhood literally under construction in a city filled with air quality needs. I have been in air quality committee meetings in my neighborhood with folks from other parts of the city who are in tears or very angry, feeling powerless to make a difference to the scary air quality issues around their homes. If we are going to be serious about being green, about being sustainable, then we're going to have to get serious about air quality. This clean diesel agreement is incredible, obtainable, and should be the standard. And it can't realistically be done with a series of good neighborhood agreements in neighborhoods throughout the city. There's a lot that I wanted to talk about, and I think that it's Tom's turn, though. And if there's questions, I would like to be at the end, because I think some of what Tom says and what Kevin says will be answering them.
Thanks, Kathy.
Good morning. Tom DeChara with C.E. John Company. We've been active in the Northwest neighborhood for the past 3 years, doing various developments, mixed-use developments, completed three over the last 3 years. We'll be working on the first block of the Conway Master Plan, we call Block 296, which will include a new Seasons Market, as well as a new six-story, 113-unit mixed-use building. That project will be starting soon. We're also negotiating with Conway to complete our agreements to act as the master developer on at least six more parcels around the Block 296 project as we look towards developing the district through a variety of different types of uses consistent with the master plan that the neighborhood and Conway and us and others have put so much time in over the last few years. This agreement for our company fits within our focus of sustainability. You know, we approach all of our projects with green design and sustainable practices in mind. The three projects that we completed over the last few years have all achieved a LEED Platinum rating, so we're proud of that and hope to do more in this upcoming work. And we've kind of approached this agreement as if it were an extension of the LEED process, and like a lot of LEED initiatives through the years, when you're ahead of the curve, there are some challenges in understanding standards, requirements, and goals. So we spent a lot of our time talking about that. So there is an educational component to this, to the marketplace, to the subcontractors, to the construction folks that are going to be working on it. You know, a lot of the first questions that we got as we've been talking with people is, you know, why are we doing this? Is this a requirement? Who's requiring this? We've never heard of this before. And it is the case, because this isn't a federal law. There's no city laws. There's no state laws that address these issues yet. So we are definitely ahead of the curve. But we've been approaching it like a lot of the early LEED discussions, to educate folks and see what they can do and hear their concerns. And I think that's reflective in the agreement that we've reached. So we're in the process now of letting contracts on the first project. I've been speaking with the subcontractors for several months over what they can and can't do, have a pretty good idea of where we'll be able to achieve on this first project, but we look at it as a roll, as Kathy and Phil mentioned, that this is an agreement that extends over a 10-year period. Expect that, you know, the first one will be a bit of a trial project, and over time we'll do better to achieve the goals that we've all set out. And I think that comes into play with what Kevin's going to speak to about some of the funds that we've been able to earmark from DEQ to help retrofit pieces of equipment that can't meet the new standards. Newer equipment does meet the new standards. The availability of that equipment really depends on different trades, different type pieces of equipment, and so forth. And those are the types of things that we're kind of feeling out right now to see how we're going to achieve it. We did include the agreement in our invitation to bid to the subcontractor community. It will become part of their contracts, and we'll have a pretty rigorous, detailed monitoring and compliance program that our project managers will record as we go, and working with the NWDA, evaluating as we go, and we'll kind of see how we perform. There's certainly an experimental aspect to this agreement. So we're excited to kind of see how we can do. I think the response among many contractors has been positive. I think they look towards other states that are ahead of us, like California, that have a little more aggressive clean air standards, and kind of see it as maybe they can get ahead of the curve a little bit too, particularly if they can participate in the DEQ program to retrofit some of their older pieces of equipment that would comply, would give them a leg up on the next project that comes along. And certainly, as we've discussed, there's a lot of work coming in the Conway District over time. So I think, you know, just in conclusion, I wanted to thank the folks at the NWDA. We've all worked on this agreement for a long time, had many, many meetings, and was a lot of volunteer hours committed to it. And I think it's a good example of what we can accomplish together when we work towards a common goal in cooperation rather than adversaries, as often the case on development issues in Portland. So I'm happy to answer questions, too, after Kevin maybe talks a little bit about some of the technical aspects of the agreement.
Thanks. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. I think it's the morning. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Kevin Downing. I'm a resident of the city, and I work for DEQ as the Clean Diesel Program Coordinator. So I'm kind of a one-trick pony in that sense. I feel compelled to provide a little bit of context. So first, to start out, the diesel engines are great. We should really understand that. When Rudolf Diesel invented the engine in the late 1800s, his intention was really literally to bring power to the people. And he succeeded in that. What we now have is still the most efficient internal combustion engine available on the planet is the diesel engine. And that's great. People, it's used everywhere because of its reliability, durability, and economy. But it's that stuff coming out of the tailpipe that's something of a concern to folks. And not just because it's nuisance value, but because of a growing body of evidence reflecting medical and health and environmental impacts that come at ambient exposure levels, not simply at occupational settings, that affect actually all major systems of the body, cardiovascular, respiratory, as well as the nervous system, adverse impacts, for which actually DEQ has documented that exposure and concentration levels within the Portland metropolitan area represent an increased risk for cancer above public health benchmarks, even out to 2017 with the changeover to new technologies. The other sort of bonus, actually it's kind of a perverse bonus impact of diesels, is that a major portion of the exhaust that they emit in the particulate is that black, that's called black carbon, which has actually been identified among other sources, as well as being the second largest human influence to climate change. And while reductions of carbon dioxide are very important to address that problem, any reductions of carbon dioxide that we take today will not be realized as a benefit to the atmosphere for upwards of 100 to more years from now, whereas black carbon reductions can potentially mitigate climate change impacts within a terms of weeks, if not months, so that effectively several researchers argue that it buys us time toward gets to the more challenging issues of reducing carbon dioxide that we need to get to balance the climate stability. So the good news, actually, in all of this is that technology is available to clean up diesel engines. It's possible with a straight face to talk about clean diesel without reservation or hesitation, that in fact, heavy-duty engines, truck engines built in 2010 or newer model years, or so-called on-road Tier 4 engines, represent the cleanest emitting engine technologies available. And in fact, these engines are comparable to natural gas in terms of total overall impact. And the problem is that it's simply economics. So these engines are very durable. I've been looking at projects where people were sending trucks from the 1990 model year vintages, asking for money to help change them out. We just recently completed a project where we changed out engines from 1949 in a vessel that operates on the river. So these are very long-lived. And so the benefits from the new clean technology will only come from accelerating turnover. The challenges in this, and this that Tom, I think, is particularly experiencing here, is that the standard economics do not really encourage people to move towards clean diesel technology. They are substantially beneficial to the public, but the cost to clean up the engine occurs with the user, for which there's not much direct benefit. People like Tom are taking extraordinary steps and willing to see beyond the narrow business case to be able to see the bigger picture and how they fit and how they can contribute to this change. The department has been working with partners like the City of Portland and others for years to try to develop other models for how we can incorporate, for instance, the purchasing power of governments to influence these kinds of changes to encourage them to occur. This is actually one model for which this can occur, from which this project we hope to be able to replicate and extend that to others. And we welcome interactions with other public partners at the city, county, and as frankly with the state as well, to see about extending this message of clean diesel through the demand that we create, through the products that we purchase, through the services that we get. This is basically our goal really here, with some grant funding that we've had available to help facilitate the changeover on the Conway project. Ultimately, our design here is to make Tom unique, or to make him less unique.
Thank you.
He is unique right now. But to make him more the standard, to make it more the norm, that the expectation is to operate a diesel engine in Oregon, in Portland, is to operate a clean diesel engine. So thank you for that. I'll take any comments or questions you might
Thanks.
Have.
Thanks. So questions for anyone on the panel?
Well, first a comment. Thank you to the Northwest District Association, which is the leading neighborhood association on this issue. And I very much appreciate your work. And also to CE John and Conway for being willing to participate in this. Kevin, my question is for you, that we have the City of Portland spend over $1 million to retrofit or get new diesel vehicles for our fleet. We're requiring our garbage haulers to do that, and we've increased the rates in order to have that happen. Yet Oregon has far lower standards than either Washington or California. And in fact, one of my understandings is that we get dumped with their old vehicles because we allow them. What would it take to get DEQ or the state to simply require the clean engines?
Well, that's actually a topic of some conversation within the department right now. Let me go back to some of the points, and let me close to that point here. So you said the standard. Actually, so what we're talking about here is a question about a health risk multiplier, so that the state of California and Washington State have used a different consideration for that, so that their estimation of the cancer risk from diesel is actually greater than what we're using right now. But still, even with the number that Oregon is using, we still end up with the situation where 96% of the population in the state is still living at excess cancer risk from diesel engines. So it's a numeric exercise, but it doesn't really change. The scale is still, the problem is still there. To get to your point about sort of what it would take to actually move towards a larger, more, say, aggressive stance, I think that, frankly, that's there's a lot of considerations in that, and some of those, frankly, are political.
That's my question. Yes. Is it something that DEQ can make a decision on, and we need to tell the governor to tell you, or to, not you personally, but the system? Do we need to add it to our state legislative agenda? Because it's clearly unacceptable that 90-some percentage, over 90% of our citizens are at risk because of these engines.
Well, let me say it. I have to say it's up to the city staff and the commissioners about sort of what falls to the top of your legislative agenda. I certainly agree that a more aggressive, more assertive stance on diesel is certainly warranted given the problems that diesel engines represent.
So is it a legislature decision or
yes,
a DEQ?
Ultimately, there are we see that there are legislative restrictions on the Environmental Quality Commission's ability to adopt more stringent standards in regards to regulating diesel engines.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Sure. It's always wise to know who the decision maker is.
Right.
Thank you.
I just wanted to, and I apologize, I do have to run, but I just want to say this is a great partnership between CE John, Northwest District Association, and DEQ, and Kevin Downing. You've done a great job being a one-trick pony over these many years. And when I was in charge of the Bureau of Environmental Services, you helped us to help to get diesel, clean diesel equipment for some of the contractors working on the Big Pipe project. And so I just really want to say hats off to your longstanding commitment to this. And this sounds like a great partnership that I'm very pleased to support. And I'll be voting, I guess, officially for it next week. So, thank you.
Thank you all. Other questions for the panel? Great. Thank you very much. And I see some other folks here who might want to testify on the report. It's a report, so we can accept it with your blessing.
Thank you.
Rather than your vote. Thanks, Dan. Anyone else who'd like to speak on this? Then a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Pritz.
Well, as I said, the Northwest District Association has been exemplary in bringing this issue to light for me and many others in the city of Portland. Sharon Genesee and Mary Pivoteau and others have been dogged and become so well-versed in this that I very much appreciate their advocacy, and it's no surprise that you have come to this good neighbor agreement. It is wonderful that you have, because these good neighbor agreements do require a lot of negotiation, a willing participants on all sides, and a lot of dedication and time in getting to the right outcomes. And it'll also require your ongoing attention, as you know, since there aren't any enforcement capabilities within the city. I am very interested in looking at this issue at the legislative level. Mm-hmm. I think it's been far too long. Commissioner Novick and I are working on some other issues in terms of air quality that we might be bringing. We'll bring to the council within the next year, and so it's something that it sometimes doesn't rise to the top of the to-do list in terms of immediate urgency. But it's life and death, and so we need to make it a priority. And I commit to doing so. Aye.
Novick.
I'm really impressed by this partnership, and thank you for all your work. And also thank you for reminding some of us about this issue. I periodically hear from Robert McCullough and others in the East Moreland and other surrounding neighborhood associations about their concerns about diesel emissions from the Brooklyn Rail Yard. And I think Kevin and I had a conversation months ago about what steps the city could take on its own and what steps the state could take to address health effects from diesel emissions. And to be honest, shame on me, I haven't really followed up on that. And I think that for the next full legislature in 2015, definitely this is something we should think about putting on our legislative agenda. Thank you very, very much. Aye.
Hales.
Yeah, this is a path-breaking piece of work, so thank you all as partners for putting it together and thereby highlighting this really important issue, not just about how do we replicate this approach in other construction projects, but how do we deal with the larger issues. It really was, I think, the same kind of teachable moment that Commissioner Novick had when I saw the data about how much of our air quality problem comes from off-road diesel. You know, we think of cars and trucks as the principal source of that kind of pollution, and yet off-road diesel, yellow iron on construction sites, even boats and ships, and railroad trains are a big factor in our air quality issues in the city. So you've really helped highlight the need to, for action on that larger scale, even while taking on a very responsible, constructive approach. Thanks for all of your good work and more ahead. Thank you. Aye. Okay, we have one item left, item 87.
Authorized second issuance of general obligation bonds for fire vehicles and emergency response infrastructure.
Good morning, Jonas. It's still morning, just barely.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. Jonas Beery, the city's debt manager. The ordinance in front of you here authorizes issuance of voter-approved general obligation bonds to finance up to $24,731,000 of public safety projects. And let me give just a little bit of background here. In November 2010, Portland voters approved up to $72.4 million in general obligation bonds for a variety of public safety projects. In May 2011, the city issued the first issuance of those bonds, leaving approximately $46.5 million of voter authorization remaining. The city has now expended nearly all of the 2011 bond proceeds and is looking to do a second phase of bonds for the second phase of those projects. Projects to be funded by this 2014 bond issue include continuing work on Fire Station 21, fire apparatus, and the PSSRP program. We do have some project staff in the room if there's questions about that specifically here when I get done. This second bond issue is expected to cover expenditures through approximately August 2015. And then we do expect at that time we'll come back with requests for a second or a third and final bond issue to fund the remaining projects under that program. Security and payment for the 2014 bonds is provided by an increase in property taxes citywide as approved by voters in 2011. Completion of the financing of the 2014 financing will result in an increase of in the annual citywide property tax levy of approximately 4 cents. Beginning in 2014-15, and just for sake of sort of example, a 4 cent increase on a home with an assessed value of $200,000 translates to about $8 annually. The property taxes generated by that levy are specifically dedicated for payment of these bonds and may only be used for that purpose. The bonds are expected to be paid over a period not more than 15 years, at which point that levy will expire. I'd also note that Council previously authorized refunding of the city's Series 2004 general obligation bonds. We expect to fold that refunding into this issuance, which will reduce total debt service payments by around $60,000 a year and reduce the levy associated with that 2004 bond issue. We expect that these bonds will be sold via in March via a competitive sale method. And I would note finally that before we take questions, if there are any, this is a first reading. It'll come back for second reading. Staff of Public Finance and Treasury, including myself, will not be available next week. So if Council wishes that we be available for the second reading, I recommend that move out to February 5th. And with that, I'd be happy to take questions.
If there's any lingering questions, we can. Otherwise, it can be coming back for roll call. Okay, questions for Jonas. Any?
I just need to note for my two colleagues who are not here that Jonas mentioned that it's being funded over 15 years. That had previously been 20 years, and at my request, they changed it, and that saved us $2 million.
Nicely done.
Thank you, Commissioner.
A million here and a million there, and eventually you got real money?
Indeed so.
Okay, thank you very much, Jonas. Anyone signed up to testify on this?
We have one person, J. Veronica Bernier.
Okay, come on up. Good morning.
Hey, how are you this morning? It's good to see you this morning. It's always good to see you. You're looking well. Good morning, Commissioner Amanda Fritz. You're looking well. That's a beautiful suit. She always looks well. Nice lady. Good morning, Commissioner Steve Novick. It's good to see you, too. You've been pulling your weight around a little bit more than usual, huh? For newer people, they're really, really giving you an initiation into Portland politics. I just want to speak to the issue. I'm a former nurse, just like Amanda. Fritz, Amanda worked very well in the nursing field when she was working there. Now she's in politics, which I think that's good. I'm not in politics too much other than to speak to issues. But as part of public health, we have to talk about the need for more emergency support for the city. It's so important, that first point of contact out there, that you get a good guy coming in. And Portland is renowned for their emergency response vehicles and the response time usually coming in under 1 to 4 minutes, sometimes beyond that 4 to 7, and not much more than that. They always are Johnny on the spot. And as a former emergency room nurse, I can tell you how seconds count. In that first pickup, like out on Kaiser, one time we picked up a lady that had CHF, which is congestive failure. And y'all know what happens with that if you're a medic. Seconds do count. And the right hospital with the right nurse and the right doctor are really important, and the right ambulance driver. So I support it 2,000%. And I just want to say hello this morning. Good morning. It's good to see you.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, so this comes back, unless there's any reason not to, for second reading next week. And we are adjourned.
Well done. Are you back in town?